Other places only make me love you best. Tell me you're the one in all the Golden West. San Francisco, I'm coming home again. No more to roam again, never to roam.
Judy Garland and San Francisco, and that will lead us in to the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David joins us, of course, on a Friday morning. You can find him on his own website, themediabeat.us, Huffington Post. He's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief, and I do believe we have him on the line right now. Good morning, David.
Good morning. A very good early morning for me. It's a lot earlier than you on this coast, you know, over on the west side. But I'm so proud to be introduced by Judy Garland, making her own tribute to Jeanette MacDonald, singing San Francisco. Oh, wow. What a nice way to get into your show.
I bet you there's probably 50% of the people listening who don't have any idea who Judy Garland is or Jeanette MacDonald.
Yes, I mean, I'm not so, I'm a little hazy on Jeanette MacDonald, but I think, oh boy, I hope people do know who Judy Garland is.
What a voice.
She's Liza Minnelli's mom, I suppose, is one of the ways she might be remembered. Liza Minnelli, you might say, I suppose, also. Oh dear.
Anyway, I was
part way to Singapore for the Trump-Kim summit, and I heard it was off, so I had to jump off the plane. Now I'm trying to claim my rebate airfare from Korean Airlines or the White House. Maybe I'll apply to the White House.
Well, what's interesting about what you say there is that the big discussion in the media about this is that once again, when Donald Trump announced that the meeting was off, he did it once again before he informed the North Koreans, the South Koreans, any of our other countries that we have ties with. And as a matter of fact, in North Korea, they first heard about it from a CNN reporter who was at the covering the implosion or the final implosion of that atomic testing site.
Sure. No one needs to be surprised by Donald Trump being impulsive, but I think it is there's an element of deep irony and some amusement that it takes something for the North Koreans to criticize someone else for making an abrupt decision. I think that was the word they used, abrupt.
It's just interesting to watch how the White House works or doesn't function in today's society, because it is functioning as if Donald Trump, and this is one thing I said all along when he ran for president, that if he won president, he has no other way of running things other than the way he ran the Trump organization, and that would really put the stamp on the White House, and it has. I mean, he's running the White House as he would run his business.
Sure, and therefore no one should be surprised by that. I don't think anyone who's watched Donald, as he's been known quite often here in this city, and is still remembered as the Donald because his one of his previous wives thought that was the way to call him. He was the Donald, and if you've watched him for a long time, you know that there is no other way he can operate. And therefore, as I say, no one should be surprised. But it's extraordinary how flummoxed and shocked, I suppose. It's a touch of the Casablanca movie line. You know, I'm shocked that Donald J. Trump is behaving impulsively or apparently impulsively. I mean, overall, sometimes I've had to cover the diplomatic scene, and there is in this maneuvering that's been going on, not very much different from how diplomacy is conducted generally and traditionally. I suppose it's it's conducted in language, which is a little less diplomatic, in meaning polite than usual. But in essence, this is not all that different from previous efforts to engage with North Korea. The language may be different, but the brinksmanship, usually we can blame North Korea for most of it, of course, because they're the ones who are unconventional, to put it politely, in dealing with other nations. But in this case, all that's added to it is that, sure, we have a president who's now who's extremely unconventional.
You can say that.
Well, if I could say it if I could get it past my lips, yeah. So, sure, the ante is upped a little, or the tone is amped up a little. But it doesn't seem to me to warrant all the fuss that's going on now about the... I mean, it's worth considering from every media commentator, armchair diplomat, who's saying this is a shocking way to conduct business. Not so many of those same critics were all that much in favor of the summit happening in the first place.
And what is what pleases me that you mentioned that is, you know, once again, or as usual, I find the coverage of current events, I'm going to digress mildly. We have a commentator by the name of Don Morrison, and his most recent piece is how people in the news biz right this second are just like, this is the hardest, toughest, whateverest, busiest time for news ever. And his response to that is, right, what about 1968?
Sure.
And
50 years ago is
But you were having an assassination, essentially.
Of panic in every newsroom then. Yes.
Right.
And, sure. It rather outpaces the current frenzy considerably. I'm not old enough to remember it in all that much detail. But sure, just look at the list of historic events that were going on: riots, killings, and mass movements of an extraordinary kind. And the media then were sure that it was apocalyptic in many instances. And you get a lot of that same. Well, the frenzy now is probably less justified. I rather agree with Don.
And that was the interesting bit about it. And it was funny when it came out, Marshall and I both not. And we started going, like, you had the assassination of Martin Luther King, and then George Wallace got it, and then Bobby Kennedy. It was, and the biggest difference, I wasn't there, though I was a consumer at both times, and I consider myself a consumer now, is that the information was presented with, there was no question that people were freaked the bleep out, but
sure. And Paris, and I'm thinking particularly of Prague. I did cover that. I mean, I was an extremely young reporter then, but yes, the Russians rolled their tanks into Prague. This is genuine international upheaval, not the sort of shadow boxing that you've got with North Korea at the moment. But again, you know, everything requires close attention. You mustn't try and minimize the problem that North Korea poses. It's certainly very serious.
Not trying to.
And indeed, you know, I mustn't overgeneralize about the media frenzy. There are, as we're at pains in this slot these days, to point out good practice by the media as well as decrying the generality of people performing not up to snuff. There was some remarkable reporting on this by David Sanger, one of the most superb veteran diplomatic analysts and reporters. Works for the New York Times, and in Sunday's paper, almost a whole week ago, he was just watching the signs and saying, "Looks like Trump is going to call off this summit. You know, it's getting just too politically embarrassing for him."
And
he was right, and a lot of the people who got swept away were wrong.
And I have to say props at this juncture to CNN, who had both David Sanger and Gordon Chang on this morning, in fact, for what can genuinely be described as a lucid conversation.
Oh, you need to be grateful for that.
Totally.
Lucidity, a precious commodity these days, not much in circulation.
But and you have to be alert enough to notice it when it's there.
And I'm grateful for it too. Yeah.
And so that was a real pleasure. One of the things that brought to mind, though, is you have to know who has got the chops to deliver.
Yes, and you've got to, you also know, as the best diplomatic reporters can discern who's BSing you and who's not. There's been an awful lot of background briefing on the progress or otherwise of the preparations for these talks. The signs were there. I mean, we don't need to rehearse them all now, but from both North Korea and and indeed from Pompeo in the State Department here, it was far from being a done deal that June 12th would happen, and we had plenty of opportunity to be unsurprised, at least, by the personal letter from our president to the president.
So, quick question, since you are 3 hours, as Howard Cosell once said, 3 hours behind the rest of the world. I'm sure people don't know who Howard Cosell
I don't think of it
any
that
more
way.
Than
I
mean, Judy Garland.
I could be sleeping, which I would prefer. But,
I understand it.
But I'm alert and I'm catching up with the world. Yes.
And I have to say, well, you and Mike Milken, who always got up at 3 a.m., so he would be right on schedule there. But
no wonder he was such a success. I would say, ironically. Go on.
But
what is your question?
No, my question was, how do you once you cross? I mean, you are on one of the coasts still, so that kind of doesn't count. But how do you find, what if anything do you find different, in the California soup, so to speak?
Well, let me tell you that I'm actually in downtown San Francisco. I'm in a position to look out in two different directions. One looks out over the financial district of San Francisco. The other direction, I see nothing but rooftops of Chinatown. And that's an extremely interesting perspective to get. I'm looking at, I'm in something of a high rise, and there aren't many really big high rises in San Francisco, I'm glad to say. Some very distinctive buildings, as we know from the skyline, very familiar internationally, this skyline. But I'm in a position to look down on this neighborhood, which is still very low rise. And so I see a lot of rooftops, and it's extraordinary to see something that just confirms that I'm in a cosmopolitan world, a globalist world, and I think that's the reality that we have to face. We also have to note, of course, that the isolationist and the small-minded, I would say, view that has propelled Donald J. Trump into the presidency is a fact and an undeniable matter of reality concerning so much of the United States, enough to get the Electoral College to install him as president, of course. But the globally overwhelming truth is that we live in a shrinking world. The world is globalist. Almost a pleonasm there. More words than you need for stating an obvious truth. But I'm seeing this obvious truth demonstrated so clearly to me now. Many roofs that I'm looking at right this minute have two flags flying on them. The United States flag, the flag, the Stars and Stripes, and the red China flag. And that's a feature. It's just a choice that the building residents and owners are making all over this particular area. And then another thing, just to make sure that I know where I am, these rooftops are teeming with drying laundry. It's a little bit like Hong Kong. It's a little bit like parts of Beijing. But here it is, right in America, and flying proudly, I think. That's the look of it. Or maybe just cautiously, or just realistically, flying a United States flag as well. Say, we're in the United States, but we're also these people with a culture that comes from far away, and we're settled here. After all, San Francisco's Chinese immigrants population relation has been well established for more than a century, getting on for two centuries.
Oh.
And it's extraordinary to see this it's a massive Chinatown, one of the biggest Chinatowns in the Western world, certainly one of the first.
Absolutely.
It's just good to be the internationalist that I am, reminded of the truth of the world.
And what is also so wonderful about that, and I throw this out for the people who think that things are just happening, is in many of the businesses that were started and the families that were started were run by women. Very successful women.
Yes, yeah.
And it's
no getting away from that.
No, there really isn't. Things did happen before Snapchat, or before Snap, I should say now. But the your flags remind me of this happened a few weeks ago, and it was just a classic wake up, welcome to the world. I'm not sure whether it was Seattle, but it did make national news because a woman was very concerned that there was some sort of terrorist something going on because, see, there was a football match. And the residents of a particular building were flying the Irish flag, but they thought it was the Iranian flag. So the flag of Iran. So
I'm amused by that, but also appalled.
Well, sure. You know, they both begin with A.
Well, there's no reason we have to know the difference between the Irish flag and the Iranian flag, except when it becomes important.
Right. It's
easy enough to check, after all. Anyway. I'm more upset by that than I need to be. I know, but that's appalling.
But the point being that it's easy enough. There are certain things that are in fact easy enough to check, and the knee-jerk concern, which is fomented regularly by, your various media outlets. So in fairness, it is being churned, but this is just a way. It's like, hey, you can check, you can look, you can open your eyes. This one's easy. And I bring this up only because as you are looking out on this vista of multicultural, it's not just one culture, and it's an adoption. It's just a reminder.
No, by no means. To say China is something of it's a bit of a misdirection of attention. I mean, I'm sure that there are about at least more than a handful, a sizable slice of different Chinese languages spoken in these streets immediately below me.
Right, and these are just things that, again. They're osmosed and in some cases assumed, and then unfortunately, you turn around and in another case you realize, wow, that wasn't, I needed to provide that color, so to speak, because it's not assumed. And that's where it gets...
Those of us who do live in pockets of globalism and cosmopolitanism tend to forget how generally speaking, in pockets... not shared universally, but the overall setting, as I say, is one of global change, and it's I would claim, and of course I'm not alone in this, that this is an unstoppable movement, rather like the way the world turns around the same way every day. This is the way we're going.
Yeah, and it's something that. It's the world's going to keep turning, so.
Yes, I go. I mean, I hope so.
You have to.
It's not a nuclear apocalypse to bring it to a halt.
Yeah,
not spinning, but our presence on it, perhaps.
But in the meantime, in the absence that I'm only semi joking, if you are going to get up every morning and search the area for evidence of nuclear apocalypse. You might miss some, you might miss some other things. That's all.
We have a national press and an international press. We're trying our best to excite us about the frenzy of daily events, but it is sometimes useful just to take a step back and say, well, you know, none of this is quite so frenzied as it's being made out to be. We're little beings running around creating a lot of noise, and meanwhile, certain trends amongst us just keep on moving in a certain direction. To create too much fuss about the details, remember that the big picture is just inching forward in a different way.
And and how one does that, though, you are actually we've got a couple minutes left, and so we're not going to be able to cover this here. But I it's something that's worth discussing with you, because you've been in the midst of events that life-changing events. For long enough to know that change is possible. It takes a fair amount of time. It's messy, to say the least. It's sad sometimes, to say the least. But, you stick around long enough and something can happen.
Well, the shifts take place as well as incidents. Yeah, that's true. I think one part of the problem of journalism as a whole, and I'm part of that problem, is that it's conducted on a daily basis, sometimes on an hourly basis, and this is one of the things that forms the backdrop to our discussions every week. The fact that the pace of communications was sped up so much, the speed is increased to warp speed over the last 20, 25 years, maybe. Dramatic acceleration, and it can blur us, everything moving at such a pace, but the fact remains that change is generally speaking incremental, there are sometimes real remarkable changes that would appear to be going in the backward direction, but the overall trend is that human beings get freer on the whole, their health on the whole improves, things generally speaking are progressing. That's not a dirty word in my vocabulary at all. Progress is happening, and that's one overall pattern that we can say, even those of us who've done the same job as I effectively have for 40 years and seen that, there's been ups and downs and frenzies and moments of relative calm. But there's a general shift forward. That's my position, and I hold to it.
Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, The Media Beat.
Thank you.